Welcome to the Outthinkers Podcast. Plug into fascinating minds and breakthrough ideas that are transforming industries and the world. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf, founder of Outthinker Networks, a global think tank comprised of corporate strategists, innovators, and entrepreneurs that are shaping the future of business. If this describes you, join us at outthinker.com. Now, let's dive into this week's episode.
What I'd like to emphasize is that the imagination, okay, during relaxed day, spontaneous imagination, everybody has that, so-called daydreaming. Everybody daydreams, okay? So it's as natural as breathing to us, which means everybody has the potential to be creative. So you don't need, particular training to be able to imagine, okay? Imagination is natural. So I think everybody should be confident they can be creative. So the only thing is that they change your attitude. Okay? Don't be shy. Even though your idea may seem absurd, express your idea.
Ming Zheng is a vice director of the Center for Synaptic Brain Dysfunctions at the Institute for Basic Science in South Korea and a professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. He's also the author of A Brain for Innovation, The Neuroscience of Imagination and Abstract Thinking. When I came across his book, I just knew I had to have him on the podcast. Let me tell you why. You know, the power of your strategy, the effectiveness of your innovation efforts depend heavily on your and your organization's ability to generate creative ideas. Certainly new product ideas, but also pricing models or waiters to recruit or to operate. You know, we can prove that the more you are able to activate innovative behavior and thinking throughout your organization, the better your competitive performance. You become better at attracting and retaining top talent, and you are far more likely to be in the top quintile for financial performance. Min's work gives us scientific insights into the actual foundational working of the brain, specifically how the brain generates innovative ideas. To really understand and activate innovation in yourself, in your team, in your organization, I believe you need to understand this foundational science. And as you heard in the highlighted clip, Min believes that science shows that everyone has an ability to be creative. Imagine if everyone on your team, in your organization, were actively tapping this innate creativity for the betterment of your customers, your stakeholders, and your company. In this discussion, we dive deep into topics from his book, A Brain for Innovation, seeking to uncover what it takes to do just that. In this episode, Min shares with us the many complex dynamic brain networks and how they function and interact when they create abstract thinking and creativity. His concepts of the three B's of creativity, the three states that provide space for innovative ideas to emerge in your mind. How organizations can foster environments that facilitate creativity, and the fascinating critical part that place cells, neurons in your hippocampus, can play in shaping how we think, remember, organize, and enable organizational transformation. Ladies and gentlemen, Min Zheng. Well, Min, thank you so much for being here. I found your book and I just found it really fascinating. I've been dying to have you on the podcast. So I'm glad that we could find time with you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me here.
So I'm going to open up with the same two questions I ask all of my guests. The first is just for us to get to know you a little bit more personally. May have nothing to do at all with your work. Could you complete this sentence for me? If you really know me, you know that.
I once considered to be a musician, rather than a scientist.
Really?
In my 20s.
Wow. And what instrument or what type of music?
The drum. I played the drum. So I had a dream to be a rock star, actually, in my 20s.
What made you decide to choose science, at least for now, instead of...
Actually, I came to realize that I'm not sufficiently talented to be a professional musician. And I'm glad I made the choice to be a scientist.
Great. You enjoy that. You feel you made the right choice.
Yeah. First of all, I realized that I'm not really sufficiently talented. You know, this professional musician, that's for someone, those who are gifted. and I'm not one of those. And also life as a scientist isn't as boring as you might imagine. Full of surprises, frustration, you know, overcoming obstacles and sometimes eureka, you know. So full of excitement. And life as a scientist for me has been really rewarding. I enjoyed it.
That's great. Yeah, I want to talk more about eureka and how that happens and how we could all make that happen. But it sounds like you get many eureka moments in your career.
Not as many as I'd like to have.
Right. It's a high bar as a scientist for it to qualify as a eureka. Okay. So we're going to get into that in a moment, but I want to ask the second question, which is, what's your definition of strategy?
Yeah, for me, planning in the abstract domain, that is setting a goal and planning how to achieve it using abstract concepts. And this would be a neuroscientist definition of strategy. You know, the brain has many different systems or regions in charge of controlling different aspects of behavioral control. So at the highest level, we have a strategy, okay? So some brain regions are involved in setting a goal and planning behavioral strategy. And there are other brain regions involved in planning action sequences. And there are some brain regions, for example, like motor cortex, in charge of muscle contraction, so execution. So in other words, brain is like consists of multiple brain regions in charge of strategy, tactics, and execution. So yeah, so the, you know, the brain regions in charge of strategy, the highest control. For example, like a prefrontal cortex, which is the foremost part of our brain. And then these regions are very good at manipulating abstract concepts. They represent abstract concepts and manipulate them. So they manipulate these concepts to set a long-term goal and plan the strategy to accomplish them. So this is a neuroscientist point of view.
Fascinating. So there's a mapping of, say, of the different phases of strategy to actual areas of the brain.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Am I thinking of it correctly and thinking of them as areas of the brain, or are there different networks or combinations? Because that's one thing I got out of reading your book, was the idea that activity happens in different kind of configurations or networks and not only in parts of the brain.
Yeah, that's why it is so difficult to understand the brain. They're all connected to each other. And when one brain region is activated, it activates a whole bunch of other brain regions in a complicated manner. So scientists classify this as networks, different networks doing different things. So for example, to use like jargon, like executive network, the set of brain regions are activated when you are thinking carefully. And the salience network, like making you pay attention to something else. Yeah, on and on and on.
Okay. Yes, I'm so curious to get into that. And you talk about the default network mode and then sort of the task-oriented mode.
Yeah.
Before we go there, I'd like you just to tell me, what do you mean by abstract, you know, from the point of view of a neuroscientist? Well, so for example, you know, we can kind of think of strategic concepts as, I think, are kind of abstract things. Like right now, strategists are trying to get their heads around the idea of a platform concept or a ecosystem concept or a mindset, right? And I'm kind of thinking that what we do is we take these abstractions from other areas and we're able to then translate that into our domain. And so I was wondering, is that what you mean by an abstract concept or abstract thinking?
You know, in my book, what I talked about, the abstraction is in the scientific definition, which is detached from a specific object, you know. For example, like a generalization, when we talk about car is an abstract notion. So not referring to specific particular car, right? So car needs things like that. And then and you can represent certain rules, which is not something you can really see out in the world, right? Yeah. So these things, we do it very naturally, so we take it as granted. But if you think about it, how that is achieved, how the brain achieves that. And what I propose in the book is that one possibility, the neural network, there are multiple layers of neural network, like in deep learning. So as you process sensory information, higher and higher level neural network, neurons extract abstract information. something that doesn't exist in the concrete example.
Yes, I think it's fascinating. There is a graph in your book that I wonder if it's related to what you are saying, but you kind of have these inputs that, that get abstracted. Maybe you can just walk. I know that our readers can't see this image. If you, when you buy the book, it's on page 109. Could you maybe just describe what this image is meant to, or this diagram is meant to say?
Yeah, it's a object recognition neural network where the lower level represents very like low level feature, like a line, horizontal line, vertical line. Upper level combine these, which like some edges or like some contour. Higher level, more and more. So at the final level, like level 4, they combine all these low level features into a coherent notion. For example, elephant. Okay. When these low level features are combined and fall into certain boundary, it is an elephant. Okay. So representing elephant, elephantness. That's an aspect.
Right. Yeah. And I think that one way that that relates to strategy is that I think that when a strategist is trying to make sense of what's happening, there are these different components. There's blockchain technology and artificial intelligence and a new generation of types of people and global uncertainty. And they seem like separate things, but to bring them together as kind of a higher order abstract concept is what allows you to make sense of it.
Right. So you need, the leaders need, particularly need the ability to have a bird's eye view. So extract the current trend and extract what is needed to achieve a long-term goal.
Just sticking with this idea of abstract thinking for a moment, one of the guests on our podcast, she wrote a book on creativity, and she said that creativity is combining things, solutions that are already known, but combining them into new things. Could you speak to that?
So in the book, I talked about the default mode network and relaxed state, sleeping, when we are daydreaming, sometimes new ideas. Sometimes great ideas pop up. And that is because during idling state, our brain is in a loose state. Inhibitory control is loose. So your normal activity, the brain activity deviates from your normal rate. And sometimes many ideas are crazy, not useful. Some might be useful. So very two different domains. You seldom combine them together because you're used to, okay, this group of, you know, thinking belongs to this. Another, you know, group of thoughts belong to another group. They don't mix up together normally, okay? That's normal life. But when you are in a relaxed state, when inhibition is loose, your neural network can be somewhat erratic, okay? Deviate from normal, you know, association. And many of them, for example, like a dreaming, sometimes absurd, you know, contents you dream about, right?
Right, impossible things they could have seen.
But some might be useful, okay? And I think our brain has evolved because this is useful, okay? So we don't know in advance which is useful. So our brain, I think, evolved to be somewhat random during your relaxed mode. So randomization of neural activity. So there's sometimes good ideas come.
I love that point that we cannot know in advance if they're going to be useful. We need to have time in that relaxed state to generate permutations, many of which will be not useful. We're in a relaxed state. We create these permutations. A lot of them aren't useful. Like, what are the mechanisms by which then the brain decides which ones might be useful?
It is by learning. There is an innate value, like food when you're hungry, water when you're thirsty, things like that. And as we grow and, you know, experience a lot of things like society, you associate neutral stimuli into something value, okay? For example, if you, money itself has no value, but you can exchange money with something valuable to you. So money now, you know, gets value. So through learning, you associate value to a lot of things, okay? So sometimes like some abstract thinking which can solve the problem you have, then you can make a lot of money. Then, you know, you learn, oh, this is great. This has a value. So human has a great learning capability. So by learning, association, we attach value to many things.
Great. Just talk to us a little bit about those that state and those eureka moments that in which we can come up with these eureka moments, some of which will be valuable. What kind of situations does it happen in and why?
Yeah, you know, creativity, there are two different types. One, there are many different ways to divide in creativity. The one way of dividing is spontaneous creativity and deliberate creativity. So deliberate creativity by focused reasoning. Of course, sometimes you think very carefully, you can come up with great ideas. So that's deliberate creativity. But on the other hand, there is something called spontaneous creativity. So when you're relaxed, sometimes suddenly great ideas may appear in your brain like magic. And I personally experienced that many times. And so there are so-called three B's of creativity. So three B's stands for bath, bed, and bus. So
bed, and bus. Okay.
Yeah, bath. You take a bath. Relax, okay? So you have a problem, you thought about it, you can't really have a solution to that, then just relax. Stop thinking and just relax. And sometimes great ideas might come up. Also bed, sleep, Lay in a soft bed and sleep. Sometimes, great ideas may come up during sleep. And also bus, you take a break, go somewhere else, okay? Get a fresh stimuli, okay? So you make your neural network state into a different one, okay? So that you can come out of a certain state, okay? Yeah. So these are three B's of creativity.
I love that. Do you have any thoughts on how we know that we are spending the right amount of time in bed, baths, and buses, or that we are making enough time for that type of thinking in an organization?
I think it depends. And the modern days, in many cases, people are too busy. They drive themselves too much into work. And now with smartphone, we have less chance to make our brain relax. That means make our brain get into default modal state, relaxed state. So our brain is sort of biased to process like sensory stimuli too much. So our brain requires processing information and relax. Process information, relax. So this balance is important to things, including generating creative ideas.
Okay? Yes, that's great. So it seems like there has to be enough time for the relaxed mode to create these ideas. That creates permutations. There has to be, I guess, some kind of then selecting of these ideas. And there's probably like some capacity or something that you have. I guess where I'm going, I'm kind of leading the question here, but I kind of think of an organization as being a marketplace of ideas. And individuals come together, they think differently together, they generate ideas. But then there's also the capacity of the organization to consider ideas. And some organizations don't have enough time to consider the ideas. Is there any kind of analog to that in the brain?
Yeah, I think that's a good comparison between brain and organization. Like a brain consists of neurons, organization consists of people, okay? So individual people, they could generate different ideas. And then the whole idea of spontaneous creativity is increase randomness in the brain so that if some of the writing ideas, you capture that. Like an organization, instead of the leader making whole decisions or, maybe let many people generate ideas, so many are probably not useful, but a few of them might be very useful, okay? So this is group creativity, and more the group creativity is emphasized.
So let's stay with group creativity for one second. What can we learn from neuroscience that would help us with creating group creativity?
The spontaneous creativity is all about letting non-normal or diverse ideas or activity foster that. So there's sometimes, a new solution which you couldn't think of may come up. So I think the same thing is the organization where you foster diversity and then foster, their free expression of their ideas, exchange of ideas. And many of them might not be useful, but some may be very useful. So I think the leader, it is important to use that, you know, potential of the organization and let their people express their ideas and then consider them seriously, even though they may seem absurd.
Yeah, it's interesting to explore that. And I've got so many questions that we could go to, but I have a few kind of specific ones that I want to make sure that we cover. So I'll jump around a little bit. This one's a little bit out there, but I learned about place cells in reading your book. I was wondering if you could tell us what a place cell is, maybe illustrate how what they are with regard to how different animals use them or have them, bats and birds and mice. And then where I was going to go is I was going to go into spatial computing from there. Can you just tell us what place cells are?
Yeah, place cells are neurons in the hippocampus, which is one brain region all mammals have. And there, if you record single neural activity, that particular neuron is active only when the animal is in a certain location, certain place. That's why it is called place cell. Of course, there are different cells fire at different locations. So by looking at their activity patterns, you know where you are. And this discovery was awarded in 2014 Nobel Prize called GPS system in the
brain. Wow, like a GPS system in the brain. That's what I was thinking. Huh? And then in your book, you talk about that maybe bats have those more developed than birds. Could you explain why?
So what I proposed in the book is that land navigation animals, compared to birds versus like humans or rats, okay? We are land navigating animals. So birds, to navigate to certain location because they can fly, they need current location and final destination. They go directly there, okay? Very simple. Whereas land navigating animals, we need to remember pathways, because if you go straight, they might be a river and a rock. So to be able to navigate in your like habitat, you have to remember pathways. And there are so many different pathways, okay? Trajectories. It is so difficult to learn everything by experience. It takes so long time. So I think what I propose is that brain has evolved to simulate hypothetical navigation when you are sleeping and yet when you are relaxed, when you are in the default mode network. So it's like offline learning. Even though you don't navigate when you're relaxed in your brain, it simulates diverse trajectories and evaluate which is the best one from one location to another. Without that, it'll take like, many, many, many years to learn optimal trajectory, like in your neighbor. You move to a new location to learn to navigate properly there. It'll take many, many years.
Yeah, when I go to a new location or a city I haven't been before, it's overwhelming because I'm thinking about so much. And I guess my spatial orientation isn't tuned. My place cells aren't helpful because I haven't been there before.
Right. Like a few weeks, you get used to it, right?
Right. A few weeks, you get used to it. I wonder if as a leader then, you know, maybe there are abstract places that our people are in. So when a strategist people in an organization think that I don't know where we are or where we're going. This is a new place, a new environment. What's going to happen? It can get very nerve-wracking. But if we can put them into mentally into a place that they already know, oh, we've been here before, or another, this is like something else that you've experienced, that it allows us to relax more.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. I think one reason might be because spatial sense is special for us, for animals, okay? Compared to other senses. So spatial navigation can be mapped. We have a brain mechanism, strong evolutionary origin of a spatial navigation. So if we take advantage of that mechanism, that is, as you said, mapping abstract domain into like a spatial navigation strategy. Our brain has been, you know, it's good for that.
Yes, yes. Yeah, which is why I think that spatial computing is so interesting. And I think why a lot of metaphors that we use for strategy are space places, climbing a mountain, crossing a river. It is a metaphor that helps us feel comfortable about where we are and where we're going.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. So I've got 15 more questions. I have time for just one more. Is there a question that I didn't get to ask or something that you didn't get to say?
So I'd like to emphasizes that the imagination, okay, during relaxed state, okay, spontaneous imagination. Everybody has that, okay. It's so-called daydreaming. Everybody daydreams, okay? So it's as natural as breathing to us, which means everybody has a potential to be creative. So you don't need, you know, particular training to be able to imagine, okay? Imagination is natural. So I think everybody should be confident they can be creative. So the only thing is that they change your attitude, okay? Don't be shy, okay? Even though your idea may seem absurd, you know, express your idea.
Thank you. I love that. That is such an important message, and inviting everyone in the organization to tap into that natural creativity that is innate to their brains, because it's that creativity that is going to shape the future of our organizations and our world. And we need everyone's ideas. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, for writing this book and capturing so many years of study into your field, into something that is accessible to non-scientists like us. How can people continue to connect with you and learn from you? Certainly, we will encourage them to buy the book and read the book and listen to this podcast. Any other suggestions for how people can stay connected to you?
I love receiving email. If they have any questions, you know, you can send them an email.
Great. Okay. Well, Min, thank you so much again for taking the time to be with us and to unpack some of this for our audience. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. It was my pleasure.
Thank you to our guests. Thank you to our executive producer, Karina Reyes, our editor, Zach Ness, and the rest of the team. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. I'm your host, Kyan Krippendorf. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you soon with another episode of Outthinkers.